Today I'm talking to Paul Kohler. You're the Liberal Democrat MP for Wimbledon. You're shadow spokesperson for Northern Ireland and on the Home Affairs Select Committee. Is that the sum total of your titles? Because you had a few more added, didn't
No, and I've got another one now. I'm on the Northern Ireland Select Committee as well. So,
you? Very busy. So welcome back to Radio Jackie, Paul. Briefly, shall we first talk about Davos yesterday and Sir Keir Starmer? What was your take on the Prime Minister's actions about the tariffs, and which didn't actually happen in the end?
well, I'm pleased he finally, in the Commons, said something firm about what Trump was doing. So I'm pleased he finally said something. He has been, in my view, too supine with Trump. I think Trump is a bully and therefore you have to stand up to him. I think what Macron did, what Carney did, was standing up to him. And I do think Starmer yesterday in the Commons also stood up to him. And I think that's important. There's a limit, you can't go too far. We must maintain our relationship with America. But you have to stand up to Trump. And I think there's lots of sensible people in America. I was in America over Christmas, and there's lots of sensible people there and in positions of power. And we have to distance Trump from them. And I think that's what happened. And that's why I think Trump has seen sense, because he's been told by the sensible voices within the American administration, you can't do what you were doing. And I think standing up to him is part of that process.
Yeah, I think so too. And also, it's made us more, I think, allied to Europe in our stand up against Trump, hasn't it?
Yeah, and we have to, we have to, clearly we have to get closer to Europe. We're in a world where we have America clearly moving away from Europe, where we have China and Russia as hostile. We need to move closer to Europe, because otherwise we'll be on our own in a very choppy waters.
Okay. Can you update me on your latest campaign win in getting step-free access at Raynes Park Station?
Yes, well, this predates me. MERT and Lib Dems have been fighting for step-free access for many, many years, with a long-running campaign petitioning for ages and ages and ages, long before I even joined the Lib Dems. So this isn't my victory. It's a victory for local Lib Dems and others. It's not just the Lib Dems. Others have been campaigning as well. And finally, after they've done a feasibility study, and now I had a letter from Lord Hendy, the transport minister, said, right, they've got the money to take us to the next stage, design stage. That does not mean we've got step-free access. What it means is they're putting the money up front to design what needs to be done so they can properly cost it. They have made very clear at that point they'll be looking, if they then decide, or in deciding whether they can then build it, which is what we need after all, they will be looking for the council to do match funding and any other sources of finance. So though we're not there yet, we're one stage closer, and we'll have to see what the costs are. We have to see whether Merton Council then is able to match fund and whether there are other sources. So there's a lot to be done, but we're one step further. No pun
Step, I
intended.
like it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a step further. That's great. You are cautiously welcome a commitment from TfL to upgrade signalling and improve customer information. Why cautiously?
I'll wait to see. I will not celebrate till it actually happens, I suppose. I've still, regardless of this newish to politics, but I have learned that you cannot rely on things happening until they've happened. I've been campaigning, and my predecessor, I must say, Stephen Hammond, also campaigned for TfL to fund what needs funding with regard to the district line. As I think I've said previously, I've received letters from TfL saying some of the infrastructure is more than, well, something like 140 years old. I can't believe what is 140 years old. That's what they've said to me. They've now said they found the funding to upgrade the signalling and the other issues, so that will address both the unreliability and the enunciators, which I've called dunciators, because they're always wrong. I don't know about you. Do you ever use the district line?
I do. It's not my favourite line, I must admit.
You cannot rely on the enunciators. At Wimbledon, they're always wrong. They're both both where the train is heading and which ones to leave the platform first. There's four platforms, and you just have to guess or try and work out which is the busiest train, which is the one going next, because the enunciator's invariably wrong. It's so frustrating. So they promised the funding to address both those issues. They are linked issues, I'm told. It's all to do with a signalling problem and problems with the track after East Putney. So we will see. They've promised me it. Let's see. But again, we're not there yet, but we're one stage further. Before I received that letter, they were telling me, they had no funding. So we're closer, but not there yet.
I do remember being on the platform, and it was like word of mouth whether you got the right train or not. You'd have a load of people on one train and suddenly leap off to the train on the next platform and said,
Exactly.
"Is this the right train?" "Oh yes, it is." And then you'd get on. There you go. You recently wrote to the Home Office about bike theft in Wimbledon, and I believe you were referred to the Department of Transport. Were you satisfied with the response?
No. And we, as a party, we are trying to make this into a national issue, because bike theft is seen as a single crime. Each time a bike is stolen, it's seen as one example of petty crime. The evidence we are hearing from those in the police is that this is organized crime. This is crime on an industrial scale. It's well organized. You have these people stealing to order and stealing, and the bikes soon whisked to another part of the country or even out the country, and they're expensive ones. So we want to regard it as a national issue, and for the police to regard it as a national issue and regard it as an example of organized crime. I see no evidence they are doing that yet, none whatsoever.
Is it lack of police?
Well, I have sympathy for the police, because we ask them to do more and more with less and less. I absolutely understand that. But there are many inefficiencies in the police. One of the inefficiencies is we have so many different police forces. We have different police forces. So crime does extend across different boroughs, different local authority areas. It isn't picked up properly, because believe it or not, I've seen on the Home Affairs Select Committee, they all have different sort of software systems that don't talk to each other. I was in a site visit today to a company, and they were talking about theft of medical supplies from their warehouse. Half an hour later, there was a similar theft, obviously from the same culprits. It was organized crime from one of their competitors in Surrey. The Merton police knew nothing about that. The Surrey police knew nothing about what happened in Merton. There was no joined up thinking, because their systems don't talk to one another. Now, that means organized crime take advantage of this atomized approach to policing. We need to address that by cutting down the number of separate police forces and making sure they all use the same systems. And that's something the Home Affairs Select Committee is looking into at the moment. I know the Home Office is also aware of, because at the moment, yes, we ask a lot of the police. Yes, we don't fund them enough, but there's also lots of inefficiencies, because there's structural weaknesses we have to address.
I think it's happening everywhere in every big institution. It's happening in the NHS and other, where they're basically outsourcing computer systems. And as you say, they just don't join up and they need to be rationalised and brought back under one umbrella, don't they?
Yes, and we have a real problem with the legacy system, and the public sector has not got a good record about addressing technology issues and computer issues. So there's been many stories of sad and failed projects. And we need to get better at it. As a country, we need to get better at it. And we need to hold these suppliers to account and actually get software systems that work, that talk to one another, and deal with the legacy issues. And we're a long way off, and it creates huge inefficiencies.
I think, do you think we're starting to rely too much on AI to do these sort of things for us? Or not
No,
enough?
I'm not sure. What do I think about AI? AI is clearly transforming things, but Whenever I ask AI a question about something I know something about, I'm unimpressed by the answer. Whenever I ask about something I don't know about, I'm impressed by the answer. Well, I wonder why, because I don't know much about the area. So you've got to, I would urge caution when using AI to everybody. Use it sensibly and keep, and don't assume it's a repository of all that's right. I asked it recently because I didn't actually know whether there'd been any Lib Dem councillors in my old ward, and the answers that came out were all wrong. Well, I actually thought that doesn't sound right. It even got the election result wrong in the one where I'd won, so I knew that gave me a hint that something was wrong. But I think AI is useful. It's a useful way of finding sources. It's a useful way of asking sort of logical questions. If you've got this and this, what is, how can one address these two issues? So it's quite good actually working through the logic of an argument, I think. It's good for identifying sources, but always be skeptical. I'm sure it will develop. I'm sure it's useful, and it will have a huge advantages. So we mustn't be Luddite about it, but it's not a panacea.
I think you were quite involved in the Maccabi Tel Aviv inquiry, weren't you? And obviously, that was AI that sparked all that terrible mistake off, wasn't it?
Well, it wasn't. I don't think it was part of the problem. It didn't spark it off. It was part of the problem. And yeah, I was concerned there because I was asking the chief constable a number of times. The story, the background for your listeners is that away fans were banned from the Aston Villa versus Maccabi match on the basis that the Maccabi fans were seen to be more dangerous than other fans and would attack local communities. That was the concern. The evidence wasn't there. And part of the evidence proffered by the police was a fictitious match that had never happened, where Maccabi had supposedly been away at West Ham. That match never happened. It was as a police person lower in the command admitted finally, he called it an AI hallucination. Now that match formed part of the evidence on which the decision was made to ban the fans, and both before Christmas and after Christmas, in two sessions with the chief constable, he told me that it wasn't AI, and ultimately it emerged that it was. And so that was not. He didn't cover himself in glory, and I don't think he was lying. I think he was ill-informed. That it showed he hadn't done enough research into what his staff were doing, and that's where people are being lazy about AI, and that's what we have to be careful about.
Yeah. Moving on, after the High Court hearing, AELTC legal campaign, how are you continuing to assist to save the Wimbledon Park Group in their fight? Again, I know you're trying to achieve a sensible compromise with the All England club. Are you getting any further?
Well, where are we now? There's lots of, well, the lawyers are busy at the moment. So the on the planning application, the Save Wimbledon Park Group lost on the judicial review, but they've won their right for an appeal on the basis that there's a good chance they will succeed. So the appeal on the planning on the judicial review into the planning decision is being heard later this year. I think I was told in September, but later this year. So that's with the lawyers. The legal dispute over whether or not the land is a public trust of land, that's currently in the High Court. I was there a week ago last Friday. I was there for the start. Oh, yes, I think last Friday or
Yes.
last Monday, for the start of the case. That's still being heard at the moment. So that's actually being argued in court at the moment. I think it's due to end today or early next week, or Friday or early next week. So that's underway, and of course the covenants over which say there should be no building on the land, those still haven't they still exist. There's no legal issue about those at the moment. They are existing, and all it requires is for the council to exercise them, and that will of course depend who's running the council next May. What am I doing? I'm trying to get discussion or trying to help discussions between the AELTC and Save Wimbledon Park. We had a meeting just before Christmas. As I understand it, the Savernham Park Group have now submitted some ideas about how you could reduce the scale of what the LT want to do, but still address their desire to have the qualifying tournament in Wimbledon. And I've not heard back any more since then. Excuse me.
So, I guess we'll wait and see, won't we, on that one?
Yes, and to an extent, it depends what happens in the courts now. The problem is, we've got to a point we didn't want to get to. We didn't want to get into court. We wanted a compromise before we made the lawyers rich.
Yeah, absolutely. Right, let's move on. The petition to launch a breast cancer screening centre in Merton. How can people sign the petition? And why do you need to launch a petition? Is there not sufficient breast screening in Merton at the moment?
Well, we are the one borough from around here that doesn't have a breast cancer screening service. So we don't have that. And a third of eligible women in Merton do not go for breast cancer screening. It's shocking. And of course, that means many are going undiagnosed. Obviously, early intervention improves health outcomes. So it's crucial we have one. I don't mind if it's the Wimbledon side or the Mitchell Morden side of the borough. We need one in Merton. That would help address our shockingly low levels. I wrote to Health Secretary. I got a pretty bland answer back, simply telling me the address of the nearest ones outside the borough. And we are surrounded by them, but having one in Merton would help. It would help raise the profile. And I can shout about it, you can shout about it, but having someone somewhere in the borough that actually was that and did that would help raise the profile. But please, I'd say to all your listeners, please, a third of women are not undergoing breast cancer screening in Merton. That is shocking. Please, please, please do go. It's not scary. It's something. It's a man telling women what to do is not a good sign. But you know what I mean. Please, please go for those screenings.
It's obviously very important. You have a petition. What's the name of the petition for people to look at?
It's simply a petition on our website. On breast cancer screening. So you see it on our website. Put into Google Merton Lib Dems breast cancer screening, it will come up.
Super. And obviously, actually seeing one of these mobile vans in the vicinity, even in the car park, reminds women, oh, I haven't had a screen late, and to book an
Exactly.
appointment.
And if we simply had a mobile van that went around the borough but was there for the whole year, that might be the most effective way, frankly, because that really is, it pushes it into the forefront of your mind.
Yeah, you do your shopping, you see a van, you think, oh gosh, I haven't had a breast screen for ages, and then you find out how you can get one, and it goes on from there. Finally, you've recently spoken at a parliamentary debate about COVID financial support ending in April, the impact on small businesses. The government seems to have U-turned for pubs. It was rumoured Miss Reeves was banned from her local over Christmas. Is it enough? Because those high street shops, those pharmacies, music venues, you yourself own a bar. Will you be covered under this U-turn?
I don't know, to tell you the truth. All they've said thus far is they're doing something for pubs. I don't know how narrowly they are defining pub, but even if I'm covered, and I suspect I'm not, many aren't. You're absolutely right. Hotels, cafes, restaurants, other shops on the high street clearly aren't covered. They need to do more to save the high street. In the moment, we have the disaster of business rates. We have the hike in NI costs, we have the hike in energy costs. High streets are struggling, and now they're going to lose the remnants of their COVID support on business rates. So there's a huge problem for high street, and walk down any high street, not just in Merton, throughout the country, they are struggling. In fact, Wimbledon High Street is doing quite well at the moment, but even there you see closed shops. Wimbledon Village is a wonderful high street, and yet there's lots of churn even there. It's a struggle. All high streets are struggling, and we need to help them. And the The government needs to recognise that. And simply a sop for pubs because MP, Labour MPs were being banned from them is not enough. We're also, by the way, as a party, we were calling for an emergency 5% cut in VAT for hospitality in particular. Hospitality's been hit so badly, but
Yeah.
that fell on deaf ears, I'm afraid.
Well, it just feeds down through the line, the pubs, the hospitality, the high streets. You, if they're vibrant, you have a vibrant economy, don't you?
Exactly. And it's very, very difficult. And my heart goes out to everyone, in high streets in hospitality at the moment. It's such a difficult climate.
It is. Well, here's to a vibrant economy in the future, Paul. Thank you for coming back to Radio Jackie. I look forward to catching up with you very soon, and have a good afternoon or evening now.
Many thanks, Jackie. Thank you for inviting me. Take
Thanks,
care.
Paul. Take care. Bye.